It's, I think, often hard to understate how important Little Richard has been to popular music. And, you know, we often say, oh, well, this person was a giant. When we use terms like that too frequently, we don't quite capture the scope of someone like Little Richard, who was so important, not just to the development of rock and roll music, but I tell people all the time, your favorite artists were most likely influenced by Little Richard. Little Richard shaped aesthetics, sound, dance, the energy, theatrics, the frenetic energy that we see across genres, you know, from funk, soul, rock and roll. You think of someone like Prince, who influenced so many people. And I'm a fan of people today like Andre 3000, who's a rapper, but has also gone into singing. And I love Childish Gambino, who's a rapper, actor, comedian, who also sings. They are influenced by Prince. And there are so many ways that we can measure his impact. And so, yeah, he's a formidable figure in the scope of popular music, you know, across genres.
He credits many people for influencing his style early on, which, of course, was the late 40s, early 1950s, the mid-1950s. He specifically cites the gospel influence, as many R&B and rock and soul singers do. Marion Williams, who was with the Ward Singers and the Stars of Faith. Miss Rhythm, Ruth Brown, who was, of course, a star in the 1950s. And Sister Rosetta Thorpe, who unexpectedly, just looking at old videos of her with strapping on an electric guitar and playing leads, belting out gospel songs. So that foundation, complete with the whoops and the shouts, is there. When you watch those videos, and it's just remarkable how you can see the connection to the roots of rock and roll.
I mean, we think about so many people who covered it. The list of folks who covered Little Richard is too long. But I'm just thinking of some giant like Elvis Presley, who was also influenced by Little Richard, but also the Beatles influenced by Little Richard, and Paul McCartney talking about how his vocalizations. He learned to hone his own singing skills when they opened for Little Richard, the Beatles opened for Little Richard in 1962 during his tours in Europe. But we think about the folks who influenced Little Richard, and it's interesting to see that that nothing comes out of a vacuum, but, you know, expressions are often a consequence of a long intimate exchange with other expressions in different cultural spheres. And we certainly see that with Little Richard. And I mean, I think about the people who were influenced by him, there are also folks like Roy Brown, you know, an early R&B performer who helped shape Little Richard and gave him opportunities when he started off in Atlanta. Yeah, you're right. There are so many places and people who shaped him, who, you know, of course, was quite innovative in his own space. Just how powerful his impact, imprint was on popular music.
Having gone back and looked at a lot of material about him and some of the tributes, there's an author named Richie Unterberger, who's a music historian and does a lot of books on musical figures. He says he was crucial in upping the voltage from high-powered R&B into the similar yet different guise of rock and roll. And that seems to be what is coming out when you see what James Brown said, and what many others have said, is that his energy and his stage presence is really the thing that hit them. Mick Jagger, the same thing, because he performed on the same stages as Little Richard when he was opening for them, and they were opening for him early on in their career.
Yeah, it is interesting. So at that time, we could go back to the 1950s, with Little Richard, what he must have looked like for people in this. And we think of Fats Domino. And Fats were three people who were central to laying the foundation for rock and roll: Fats Domino, Little Richard, and Chuck Berry. You know, Fats Domino played the piano and sang. Again, that frenetic energy that we associate with Little Richard was absent. Chuck Berry, who played the guitar in fascinating, powerful ways, and ways that, you know, might be reminiscent of some extent some Ike Turner styles and sounds, but that energy he had with his duck walk, that was sort of ratcheting up and being close to what we might see with rock and roll. But if you step outside of sort of R&B, the rhythm and blues of that period and early rockers, The only thing that would come close to that sort of energy I would see would be in some swing bands and some of like Cab Calloway's sort of, you know, his, so he would, you know, swing his hair and he had a lot of, and don't let the Nicholas Brothers jump out, you know, and dance and have that sort of energy. But in terms of a performer, even in most swing bands, whether we're looking at, you know, Benny Goodman, any of the big bands, you know, Louis Armstrong and others, that sort of energy was absent from popular music. And also in the late 1940s and into the 1950s, the rise of bebop jazz, which was very subdued, you know? So you had a cool, a different expression of cool coming out of, you know, Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Bird Parker. But again, that sort of energy that you saw on that scale in popular music, Little Richard was a guy who did all that in one performance, and it was quite extraordinary to see. And I think when you kind of look at the landscape of popular music and kind of think, you know, what did it look like before Little Richard and after Little Richard, you get a chance to just see how innovative he was in so many ways.
Well, you see that, I think, in some of those early rock and roll films, which were pretty much vehicles just to get the music out there to the public, because in the days of Alan Freed and the beginning of what were the rock concert tours, which are just collections of people playing their hits and then moving on to the next town, everything changed once Little Richard was on the stage. It sort of amped up, and that was why he sort of was towards the end of the show back in those days. And I remember on one of those films, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, and Jerry Lee Lewis, and this is much later on, we're reflecting on all that, and it was kind of like the gathering at Sun Studios between Elvis and Jerry Lee, Carl Perkins, and Johnny Cash, the great icons of the form, sitting there talking about how they started everything. And of course, everyone credited Little Richard, who was trying to take credit on his own, as he always did.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because I think he's the one who said it's not conceited, it's confident. And I think when he celebrated himself. And I think it was, to some extent, we have to remind ourselves that many of these people covered Little Richard. And in case of Pat Boone going higher on the charts with his version of Tutti Frutti. And I think that, you know, Little Richard was quite aware of his circumstances, the finances, the sort of contracts he signed, the sort of hyper-exploitation he experienced in the music industry, the gangsterism in music industry, the extent to which he was, even in his popularity and imprint for years, sort of still never got the fame that someone like Elvis and people who explicitly said, I model my, the Beatles, right? For years, as you start to see rock and roll be increasingly associated with being creative and innovated by white people, right? And then Little Richard becomes just a sort of guy who may have associated with some rockers, you know, that when that narrative seemed to become dominant. And I will say that in my classes at UConn for years, I tell my students that rock and roll evolved out of black music, that African Americans were the people who founded rock and roll and created rock and roll and named Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Fats Domino. And my students are almost always surprised. They assume that Elvis created rock and roll and that whites were the ones who invented it. And there might've been a couple of white black guys who may have come around. And so I think that for Little Richard, in some ways, even as people acknowledged him, he often felt simultaneously overlooked. And it was beautiful to see that in his later years, that there seemed to be a turn and a more explicit celebration and recognition of his imprint in the genre. Not just being inducted into the initial class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 86, but also all the other accolades he received, you know, in movies and documentaries and books and so many other spaces. So I think in many ways he may have felt redeemed, certainly by the end of his years. And it's beautiful to see that he lived this long, I mean, 87 years, and let alone the sort of global imprint in popular music and to adoring crowds of all races. I mean, he lived a remarkable life. And to meet and to, you know, hobnob and enjoy the quality of life that this guy had and influence so many people and to bring so much joy to the world. I mean, he really had a remarkable life. 87 years. It's really outstanding.